Award-winning journalists, New York Times bestsellers, no topic out of bounds, no opinions left unsaid, an institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica, MLB.com, and welcome to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters podcast. Mr. Ryan cannot be with us, but Mr. Albom and I have been talking to each other for 100 years, so we should be able to get you through the next 45 minutes or so. The college basketball national championship is tonight, and we will have ample time on Thursday to break down, but it was a fascinating, in different ways, semifinal Saturday, because they all are in different ways. But let's start with the controversial one, which is Virginia against Auburn. Auburn looks like they have the game won. And Mitch, I'll ask you this, okay? I don't even think that the shooting foul was controversial. You have to call that. He bodied up on a shooter from the three-point line. If you're not going to call that in the first minute of the game or the last minute of the game, I don't know why you have a whistle. And then there's the double dribble on Ty Jerome that didn't get called. And Mitch, I'll just set it up this way, okay? I refuse to treat a ball going off a kid's foot and a double dribble like it was the pass interference call that wasn't made against the Saints. I understand that replay could have fixed it, but at some point, human error cannot be treated like the end of the world in sports.
Well, I don't know if they're going to end up just bringing instant replay back into college basketball the way that they're, you know, obviously the play that you just referenced in the NFL has led to a new policy of what you can review. And I don't know if this is going to lead to, you know, now fouls can be reviewed and double dribbles can be reviewed. Here's what I keep coming back to that game when I watch it. Okay, you don't make that call at the end. There's going to be just as much screaming. I mean, you know, they're going to show the same play, and they're going to go, how on earth did they not
but
call that a foul?
But didn't you think it was a foul?
It was absolutely a foul. Mike, it's a non-starter conversation.
Yeah,
if you read the rules, it's a foul. Now, the problem with college basketball or in NBA basketball when it comes to fouls is the other part of fouls, which is, well, you don't call a foul in that situation.
I know.
And Bob would probably go off on that about, you know, there's certain times for certain fouls. Well, the only way that you can be pure is to say if it's a foul, it's a foul. And I do think that people have a bigger stink to make over the lack of the double dribble call than that foul. But, you know, a lot was happening at that moment. Refs are part of the game. He still has to make the three free throws. I mean, how many games did we watch in this tournament already, Mike, that have been determined by guys missing free throws and not three straight? So, I don't know. I think one way or another, you're screwed on that call.
And Mitch, here's the thing. And again, I'm not justifying the missed call. I know that the Auburn people feel like they got screwed. Okay. But it's like you always say about the call against the Saints. They did have a chance to stop the Rams in overtime and they didn't do it. Okay. That was way more egregious. So yeah, it hurt Auburn obviously badly in that moment, but they didn't have to foul the shooter, you know, which it wasn't a great shot. It was one of those bang bang plays and he missed and he had a decent look, but he didn't have to be that close to it. And I, Mitch, you're right. I look back on that moment and what I think is a foul that had to be called. And I'm thinking about Kyle Guy. I'm not thinking about the tragedy of Auburn not getting to go to the finals. No, that kid, first he makes the first two, then they call timeout, and then he comes back and knocks down the last one. And Mitch, afterwards, you see him say, you know, I wish I could tell you I was very confident. And the kid said, no, I was scared to death.
Right. Well, that kid has something. I mean, in the last few games, he's up and down, and during the course of the game, he won't make all the shots that he's supposed to, but he makes the big ones.
I mean, he's
a pretty amazing clutch player for the little that I've gotten to see him, and when I saw that he was the guy going up, I was convinced that that ball was going to go in.
Yeah, me too.
If he didn't get fouled. If he didn't get fouled. So, you know, he did have to do it the hard way with three straight free throws, and you can argue that if he didn't get fouled, because it did affect the shot, that he might have made it otherwise. But, you know, we're negating a great game by both teams up to that point.
Yeah.
I mean, to think that, you know, Virginia blowing that lead and the way that Auburn came back speaks so well to that's the part that I feel bad about. Not that final call, but that Auburn was doing the impossible, it seemed, you know, as a number five seed, as never having been there before, all the stuff that they went through and losing players and losing their you know, that great player. And then they come back from that 10-point deficit and you wanted that to be the ending. You wanted that to be, okay, you know, they did it and then Virginia gets this reprieve. That's what I kind of feel bad about for Auburn. Not that they got screwed by a call. They got screwed by a story. You know, the story would have been better if they had come back from that and somehow won it.
And, you know, the other thing I was thinking about, and I, you know, obviously the Auburn kids played great. They look like they had been knocked out. They're downtown. They go on an incredible run, and then they end up losing the game. I did have a quarrel with them continuing to foul when they had fouls to give, okay, thinking that they were going to disrupt the whole thing. I don't know. I actually thought that in the wild scramble at the end, they might have just been better off letting Virginia go and try to hoist a shot up. Jay Billis made a great point with Mike Greenberg on Mike Greenberg's show, Get Up Today. You know, that's a rule they ought to look at. Because in the NBA, if you get in the last, whatever it is, 2 minutes, and you have fouls to give, after you give the first foul, the second foul, you're shooting free throws, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's just one more thing in college basketball that makes these last minutes or 2 minutes go on endlessly and endlessly. And I do think that in that moment, you know, because they had the fouls to give, they were going to give them. And that one point where they fouled after the missed free throw, I'm thinking, I think I might have let them just play there, you know, because they got to go down and try to figure out how to get a good shot.
And time goes fast. And time goes fast when you're trying to do that. You know, a second.
Yeah.
It's a tough game to play. I really agree with you, Mike. It's a tough game to play that let's catch up with fouls. And you know, there's several things about fouls in the college basketball that I wish they would change. That's one. And the other is the five foul and you're out thing. You know, Tom Izzo and I had a discussion about this last week when they were going. I did a big piece with them going into the tournament. And he said, you know, the one thing that I talk about with my football buddies, because he and Steve Mariucci are, you know, real close.
Yeah,
and he's
right.
Got a lot of friends in the NFL. He says, you guys, you know, you got a player makes a bonehead play or something on a foul. Okay, you know, you got to live with the consequences, but he doesn't have to come out of the game, you know?
Right,
and you think about that. And he lost, you know, we'll get to the Michigan State game in a second, but he lost Aaron Henry, who proved to be the best player on the court in the final seconds, the final minutes for Michigan State. He lost him early in that game when they do that thing to the second foul with 11 minutes to go in the first half. Sit your player down for the rest of the half.
I hate
that. What are we preserving here? If we went to six fouls, what's so bad about it? It means you get to see the real star players in college basketball a little bit longer. And so I have a beef with that. I have a beef with how they handled the intentional fouling, as you point out. But I do want to take my hat off to Auburn. Yeah. Bryce Brown and those three-pointers down that stretch. Every time he put another one with his hand out, I'm thinking, no way again that they come back. They were a great story. I got issues with Bruce Pearl. I have to almost separate him from his past. But he is sincere in his emotion and coaching those guys. And I always feel with kids, you know, it's not the kid's fault. It's not the 18-year-old's fault. They don't know what's going on in the process. They believe in a man who believes in them and leads them and in many ways is a father figure to them. And they had a great group of guys and they just kept coming. And I kind of would have liked to have seen them in the final, except we have to say, Mike, we're in the story business. That's a pretty incredible story for Virginia, too.
Yes.
Number one last year, first game, possible national championship. I'm pretty sure if you called Elias, you would find out that has never happened before.
Yeah, and by the way, talking about Brown, Mitch, he hadn't been making anything.
Nothing.
He ends up making four threes. Those are the only four baskets he makes in the game, okay? Yep. He's making nothing. And then when the season's, they were great, okay? But you're right about Virginia. I'm glad, and I'm not rooting against Auburn. Charles Barkley's a pal of mine. I know how happy he would have been. Okay. Virginia's a great story, Mitch. You're right. You know, I write books for young readers, and I've spoken at hundreds of schools over the last 15 years. And a stock part of my speech, as you know, is I tell them, hey, anybody in this gym today could get knocked down. It requires no talent, no spirit, no imagination, no heart. We're all great at getting knocked down. But it's how you get back up that tells the world all that stuff, okay? Right. They got knocked down as hard as a number one seed ever got knocked down in college basketball. And not only that, you know this, they got branded as a team that was never going to get it done at this time of year. That not only did they get knocked out last year, it's like that punch that got them knocked out last year was going to knock them out from now until the end of time. And not only, Mitch, you know this because we've been watching this tournament and talking about it. Not only have they come back, they've won all these close games. They have had to show heart and resilience and poise all the way to Kyle Guy's three free throws on Saturday.
Yep, which suggests perhaps we get a similar game tonight. That would be nice. I'd like to see it offensive. You know, I don't want it to be ugly.
You don't want it to be offensive.
Yeah, right. Right. Good point. I'd like it to see, you know, be something where we're making a few baskets here or there, and the score gets into the 70s and not the 50s or the 40s, heaven forbid, with Texas Tech. But Virginia's worthy of this, and it is a great turnaround, and you're very, very right. A loss like that can sink a program for years, can get a coach fired, can demoralize people, and all they did was own it. And I admire the way that Tony Bennett handled it and just said, we're going to own it. This is part of who we are right now, and we can never forget it. Now let's turn it into something. And they are one win away now from the absolute ultimate turnaround. Just as it never happened before, a 16 beating a 1. This is no one. The best that any team can do is equal this if they come along to lose 1 year and then win it again. You can't do better. Can't do better than what Virginia's going to do. Now, they are going to have their hands full with this Texas Tech team. You know, because of Michigan State and my having to, you know, be close with that the game and watch it, I had to study a lot about Texas Tech and study what they did to the Spartans. And, you know, this was, remember, after we watched them do the same thing to the Wolverines. I wrote in my column today that they defeated the entire state of Michigan without allowing 100 points. Okay. They did. 44 points to Michigan and 51 points to Michigan State. That's crazy. To shut them down. Here's the problem with Texas Tech. If you play them best of seven, you can beat them. I think a lot of teams can beat them. But if you are only seeing them for the first time, you can't simulate them in practice. This is what some of the guys were talking about in the post game after Michigan State. Yeah, we tried to prepare for them, but if you could play like Texas Tech in practice, you'd be playing like that in the games, right? If you had that kind of defense. They literally make invisible the whole middle of the court. There is no lane.
There is
no place to go. Look at what they did to Cassius Winston. Cassius Winston, I would argue, is the best player in college basketball at getting into the lane and navigating without, you know, losing the ball. Not necessarily driving either, you know, pulling up for a little shot, dishing out. He never got in there. It was like they took the middle of the field. It was a donut all of a sudden. There was no middle. And so they are a very, very challenging team that could make for an ugly game. But Mike, how big a story would it be if Texas Tech wins the national championship?
No, Mitch, you know that my friend David Israel once referred to Texas Western beating Kentucky as the Brown versus Board of Education of college basketball. Okay.
Right.
All those black kids from Texas Western beating all those white kids from Kentucky. And it literally changed the face of college basketball when it occurred more than a half century ago. Nobody would ever compare another Texas school trying to win the championship to that. But this would be a great story. And by the way, when you're talking about defense the other day, I love Chris Beard saying one of the teams he wants to watch because of their defense is Virginia. Yeah. Except that his team plays it a little better because I think his team is a little more physical than Virginia is. He's a disciple of Bob Knight. You know this. He took the Vegas job. He gave it up when the Texas Tech job opened. I love the fact that Patrick Mahomes was at the game the other day. This is a great story because you remember, even at the start of the tournament, we all kind of liked Texas Tech. They were everybody's kind of fashionable, kind of outside the box pick to make it to the Final Four. But you're right about defense, okay? They you look down there, okay, and all you see are their kids in the middle. It's like they're on the power play on defense. It just seems like they constantly have you outnumbered. And they, Mitch, they survived Jared Culver not having a great game on Saturday.
And losing Tariq Owens for a big chunk of the game. They were playing without one of their star players, with their star player not coming alive until the final couple minutes. He did score, I think, 6 points in, right down the stretch, which kind of put Michigan State away. And they are so coordinated, Mike. They're like, I hate to liken this to this, but there's this NBA halftime act. It's really stupid. It's like the Jackson 5 or something like that, and they're all on a stick. Have you ever seen this at halftime? They're like, they're five guys on a stick. The only reason I bring that up is because they move exactly at the same time. They move left and right at the same time. You're going, how do they do that? That's what these guys are. They move as if they are coordinated like a dance team. And so they get back. If you try to run on them, they're already there. If you try to penetrate on them, there's three guys in the middle coming at you. And you would think, okay, three guys in the middle, all we have to do is just dish the ball off and find the open guy, right? But they're long and they intercept those passes. It happened to Winston constantly, of him trying to dish out to somebody else and they would poke the ball away or steal it or turn it over. The Spartans had 16 turnovers, and that's very uncharacteristic for them. And Winston was 4 for 16 on his shooting. He had more turnovers than assists, four turnovers, two assists. And this is, you know, arguably the best point guard going in college basketball. So I do not in any way think that they are an underdog just because Virginia is a little bit of a bigger program.
Oh, no. I think they can win this. Pick them, don't you think, Mitch?
Absolutely pick them. And here's the other point I want to make about both of these teams, more so even for Texas Tech out of Lubbock. I mean, the only thing that came out of Lubbock before this was Buddy Holly, you know? And they had to talk their star player into staying in Lubbock, Culver, because he was at the time like a three-star recruit. They don't have, Mike, anybody on that roster, and they never do, that gets the headlines when ESPN covers, you know, signing day in college basketball. You never see, guess who Texas Tech signed? Yeah. Never. And they are playing for the championship, and right behind them is Virginia. Virginia doesn't have a ton of recruits. This is not Duke. This is not Kentucky. This is not even, you know, Michigan State or some of the other places that get, you know, pretty big players. So this is a testament to the fact that you can still win in college basketball without selling your soul to recruit everybody, you know, every five-star guy under the sun. And I think this is the new trend. You know, how many times is Duke going to go to the well and walk away or not get there? How many times is Kentucky and your friend John Calipari going to continue to do this and say, hey, you know what, maybe this whole thing isn't working. This five-star chasing isn't working, because look at Texas Tech and Virginia.
And you know what, Mitch, you know, this is what they hoped that Bob Knight would do when they hired him, and it turns out to be a guy who sat next to Bob Knight and Chris Beard. And I think that the way he gets his kids to buy into defense, and you know this, okay, and you're right about something, maybe it is a little easier to get the kind of player you're describing to buy in on defense, because they aren't all McDonald's All-Americans.
That's right.
You know, they all don't think they're going to go to college and it's going to be five slam a jam a 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. And what's interesting to me, and again, we sometimes Monday is great after like big playoff games, and sometimes we got a Monday night game like tonight. Okay. We'll have plenty of time to break this down, but there's going to be four guys in particular to watch in this game. It's going to be the law firm of Mooney and Culver for Texas Tech, and it's going to be Jerome and Guy. And we have to talk, you know, for all of the focus on Jerome's a double dribble that wasn't called. Man, oh man, he is a dead eye shooter, and you know that's going to be job. I think job one, even more than Kyle Guy, is going to be finding a way to shut down Jerome. But just getting back to Texas Tech for one second, Mitch, you look at that game they played against Michigan State, okay? And I always joke with Mitch, what they really did in that game was out Izzo a Tom Izzo team. Okay. The things they did better, they did things better than Michigan State does them to get to this game. Mitch, this is three different times in the national semifinals when Michigan State could not get past 55 points. They couldn't get to the speed limit. You pointed that this out in your column. They lost to Butler one time, 52-50. They beat Wisconsin 53-41. Mitch, it was the worst game. All the years I took my sons to the Final Four, that was the game I thought might kill college basketball. And on Saturday, they scored 51 points. And, you know, I don't – obviously, different groups of kids, same coach, but man, oh man, they get to this stage time after time, and they can't throw the ball in the ocean.
Yeah. You know, and again, what's the only constant? Tom Izzo.
Yep.
So, of course, the fingers end up going. Now, first of all, I'm going to say this. Tom Izzo's fantastic. He's a fantastic person,
yeah.
And he's a fantastic coach. And he can't get any higher elevated here in the state of Michigan. We already think of he's in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, nobody is going to question what he does or whatever, no matter what. And getting to these Final Fours in and of itself is massive. I mean, does Tom Izzo get less credit now for losing to Texas Tech in the semifinal than Mike Krzyzewski kept for not getting there because they lost in the Elite Eight? You know, sometimes you're on such a big stage that your failures get magnified more and people forget about, wait, I had to get here. You had to get to the Final Four to fail at the Final Four. Krzyzewski didn't even get there with the team that everybody considered, you know, was for the ages here with a player that one day may be the LeBron James of his generation. So, you know, we have to say that about Izzo. But you're right when you point this out. There's no denying this. Okay, 2019, he gets shut down by a team that he did have 6 days to prepare for. Yes, Texas Tech is really tough, but they're a lot tougher. They're going to be a lot tougher for Virginia to prepare for than Michigan State. Michigan State knew who they were playing. They knew what they were up against. They looked like they'd never seen it before when they got out on the court. And they were thrown off, and the ball was... Izzo even said, I couldn't believe we were only down by a basket at halftime. I was ecstatic. That's how bad they played when they started. And they only scored, you know, in the 20s. This has happened in 2015 against Duke. They scored 25 points in the first half, and they were out of it by the time the second half, you know, was halfway through. They were 20 points behind. To Butler, they couldn't score a basket last 10 minutes.
Oh, God.
Okay? Just free throws. One basket in the last 10 minutes, and they end up, you know, trying to claw their way back to it, but they can't get it, and they lose 52-50. In North Carolina, they played back in 2009, I think,
Out. Was that the one in Ford Field?
Yeah, that was the one in Ford Field, in the national championship game, and they got totally decimated in the second half. Lost by 20. And in the 2000, I think it was 6 or 5 game that they played against North Carolina, they got blown out in the first half. So he's not bringing, they're not getting their A performances when they get to the Final Four. And he has to own that. He's 1-for-8. Here's the other percentages. Mike Krzyzewski, 12 times, 5 wins. Roy Williams, 9 times, 3 wins.
Yep.
John Wooden, forget, 12 times, 10 wins. Okay, Bobby Knight, 5 times, 3 wins. Jay Wright, 3 times, 2 wins. Only Calipari, really, I'm going to give you one other name in a second. Calipari of the current guys has kind of got a little of that. It's 1-for-6, although, you know, 2 of them were the Memphis and UMass things, which don't count anymore. But you know who he really is? Mike? Dean Smith.
Yeah.
Dean Smith, remember when Dean Smith, that was
never
his thing?
We thought he'd never win the big one.
He was 2-for-11. 11 times there, 2 wins. Izzo's on that track, you know?
And you have to say, watching the game, okay, and it's 55-51 with a minute left. Culver makes the 3. I mean, who knows if Michigan State was going to find baskets or free throws in the last minute. But when it goes from 55-51, if Culver misses that shot and Michigan State goes down and scores, then we're, you know that was the so-called dagger shot. That was the dagger shot on a day when Culver couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. Okay.
Well, the key actually was a little just before that was 54-51, and they come down, and this is what they're all talking about here now. 54-51, I believe, and they come down and they get the ball out to McQuaid, and McQuaid takes a shot and misses, and he had come up with this cramp, and they're all talking about, oh, poor timing for this cramp, you know, cramp in his leg just when they most needed the shot. Listen, I love Michigan State, but that's revisionist thinking. Where is Cassius Winston? Okay, yeah. Cassius Winston's, this is his team. Yep. And in the final 6 minutes, not only did he not score a point or have an assist, he committed several fouls. He missed four shots. He turned the ball over. Don't tell me about Matt McQuaid missing a shot because his leg cramped up. It shouldn't have come down to Matt McQuaid having to try to hit a three-pointer. Okay, that's not it. It came down to Cassius Winston not being able to be Cassius Winston because Texas Tech wouldn't let him be in the end. And he was just a fouling and shot missing machine in the final 6 minutes. And you know, if you're going to pay accolades to guys, you know, when they're doing well and you say, man, he's the best college, but you know, we all know point guards. I mean, isn't college basketball, Mike, isn't the NCAA tournament literally stitched by famous point guards taking over games when they absolutely had to? Mateen Cleave shaking off an injury and coming back to, you know, in the middle of the game to lead his team to that national championship. How many versions of that have we seen?
Mitch, they don't even have to be famous. You can go great stretches of these Virginia games, okay, and not hear Kai Clark's name, okay? But he's in control of the game. He's going to get the ball to Guy. He's going to get the ball to Jerome. And again, you're right about Cassius Winston. And again, these aren't pros. We're not looking to. He's a great kid with a great story. He's a great Detroit story, a great Michigan story. Okay. But when it was all on the line, and again, on a day when Jarrett Culver was not having a good day, when it's 52-51 after Henry's layup, I've got the play-by-play sheet right here.
Right.
Culver comes down and makes a jumper. Then he makes a free throw. Then he makes the three. So he did all the things that you're saying Cassius Winston did not do, Jarrett Culver did for his team.
Right. And whether it's Magic Johnson, Bob Cousy, Phil Ford, Isaiah, Bobby Hurley, you know, Jameer Nelson, that's what the NCAA is, you know. Yep. And he needed to be that guy in the stretch. And I'm not saying he wasn't, like, he did something wrong. I'm saying Texas Tech did not let him. And that's why they won. And that's why, you know, Izzo correctly tipped his hat to them. But, you know, I'm going to do a parting shot on this later. I'd love to see him come back. Because, you know, I don't know that his draft stock is that high. And boy, if Cassius Winston came back for a senior season with the team that they are going to have returning, it would be something else. But that's, you know, we'll see how the winds blow. Right now, we have a pretty incredible story.
And Mr. Album, before we get off the subject of college basketball, there's two things in order that we need to discuss. One is the continuing scourge of AAU money. And all of a sudden, there's this story. And again, we know what a sketchy witness Michael Avenatti is at this point. Okay, he's facing federal charges and all that stuff. Okay. But would it you be shocked that the gambling is going on in this establishment?
That's exactly.
Zion
as much
Williamson's mother got a shoe company money for when her kid was still in high school.
Exactly as much as it shocked me, as it shocked Claude Rains discover gambling went on in Get Casablanca. No, is it? And honestly, Mike, we have reached the point where I'm not even sure that story, if it ends up being true, has a whole lot of effect on anything other than the headline.
No, that's the thing, Mitch. It's noise now. It's just noise.
Everybody sort of knows this. Look, I mean, how many schools are still in the middle of an FBI investigation that's going? You can't even keep track of how many there are here. And first of all, anything that comes out of Avenatti's mouth, I'm not listening to. I don't want to be on the side of, well, Avenatti said it. You know, let somebody else sail that ship. We'll see if it's proven true. But would it surprise me? Never. First of all, our listeners should understand, if you're kind of tangential to sports and just kind of checking in, frequently what happens in these college athlete situations, be they football players or basketball players. It's almost always between those two sports. The kids themselves are governed fairly tightly. They're watched by their coach or the college coaches who are recruiting them, and they're very careful not to be obvious and commit an NCAA violation with the kid, because the magnifying glass is always on the kid. But, Mike, and I'm going to tell you something, you could say the sentence as easily as me, there's always an uncle.
Yeah.
There's the distant father, there's the grandmother, or there's the mother who needs a job, needs a car, doesn't spend their lives trying to figure out what the NCAA is or its rules, and they see someone comes along and offers them a new vehicle, someone comes along and offers them a loan, someone comes along and puts them in a job that they think they're getting from their own merits, but really it's just a favor. Why wouldn't they take it?
Yeah.
You know, why? I mean, if you're in an impoverished situation and somebody throws you a rope, you're not thinking about the NCAA, you know, especially if you're the uncle, the grandmother, the mother. And who is the kid to go tell these adults, hey, you're going to screw up my career? So we see this story a lot. I have no idea if it's accurate with Zion Williamson.
No,
and it doesn't matter. It has been accurate before, and it's going to continue to be as long as money is treated the way it is by the NCAA here as the root of all evil.
And, Mitch, how many times do we have this conversation? I heard Jay Billis say this today. Why can't the school just buy the sneakers for their players? The question I always have is, why should these big coaches get paid a lot of money for their players wearing their shoes? What are they doing?
Right.
The players are doing everything. Okay, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. But here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. One more thing, okay? And I can only hope that Monday night's game in men's college basketball is half as good as and I watched it, Mitch. The Baylor-Notre Dame game last night was great. It was like the opera, okay? The young woman, Lauren Cox from Baylor, their best player, goes down with what was obviously a horrific knee injury. She's on the bench. They wheel her out. She comes back out. She's on the bench hobbling around so she could be a part of this. And then showing you how sports can be so cruel sometimes, Arike Ogunbowale, okay, the hero, the last-second hero of Notre Dame's national championship a year ago, goes to the free throw line at the very end with a chance to tie and misses the first. And then it was just like R.J. Barrett.
Trying to miss the second, yeah.
Just like R.J. Barrett in the Michigan State game. She couldn't miss the second. Mitch, it was 82-81. Tell me you wouldn't sign up for 82-81 in Minneapolis on Monday night.
No, it's great drama. The women's game has frequently been, by the way.
Oh.
This is not the first time there's been great women's Final Four games and championship games. I will say this, like, if I'm ever in another pickup basketball game or where there's free throws, I'm gonna intend to miss a free throw, because
that's
apparently that's how you make your free throws, is trying to hit the front of the rim. Isn't it funny how for all the things, the amazing spins and hanging in the airs and off your over the back of your head and catching a ball one-handed in midair and jamming it through, that the one thing players can't do is throw a ball at a rim from the free throw line and have with any consistency. I don't know if it's just not practiced enough or whatever, but it's damn hard to do and frequently ends up going the absolute wrong way that you wanted it to. Either the other team gets the rebound or it goes in, but it rarely works in a sport full of
acrobatics. Except if you're Kyle Guy. Except if you're Kyle Guy.
Right.
And then you just knock them all down.
Right. Well, hopefully the championship game doesn't come down to that.
What a wonderful game that was. Okay, so moving on. And again, I've got a parting shot about baseball, but there's so much going on in baseball. The NBA playoffs are about to begin, and we followed the Bucks all year, Mitch. They get to 60 wins. Okay, the Celtics, every time you think they're starting to write things, but it looks like they are locked into the 4-5 series. Okay, and then the Warriors end up with the best record. The Spurs somehow do it again. But let's just spend 1 second. There is a spot still up for grabs in the Eastern Conference, and it involves your Pistons, the Hornets. I think the Heat. Isn't there some logarithm where the Heat can still get into?
Yep. Yeah, I think they the Pistons.
But what's this? I'm looking at the schedule. Okay,
the Pistons. Pistons have two games. They end the season against your Knicks in New York.
Okay, that's a win. And spoiler alert, that's a win.
Well, that's what they're hoping for. And they're still the favorite to get in if they win, but they're 0-4 now.
I know.
In their last four games, Blake Griffin is not well. And they've got one more home game. I think it's against Memphis.
They play Memphis.
Yeah, and then they have to see. Look, it's for the right to get stomped by Milwaukee.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a great honor. But for the Pistons, it would mean something that just because they made the playoffs, I'd feel a lot better if they were doing it, winning down the stretch instead of, backdooring it in, because they had a chance, they play Charlotte. And they had a chance to close things out, and they couldn't close them out. I mean, they're really taking it to the end. They're not going to, the best that they can do is have a 500 record. And that really isn't the way that they wanted to get into the playoffs. And look at that, Mike, by the way, if the Pistons make the playoffs at 41-41, now jump over to the Western Conference, the eighth seed is the LA Clippers at 47-34. Yep. 47-34 puts you in
fourth. And they finished
slowly.
They finished slowly. It looked like they might move up to as high as fifth or sixth not long ago.
But it's just the fact that that's the eighth place record in the West is 47-34, which puts you in fourth or fifth place in the East. And in the East, a team that may not be 500 is going to get the eighth spot. So when we talk about the West being the better conference, we're not kidding. It's really loaded, and really good teams are going to get eliminated in the first rounds of playoffs there. And meanwhile, I do want to say this about the Milwaukee Bucks. 60 wins is impressive. It's hard to win 60 games anymore in the NBA with players just not interested in January and February, and with guys, injuries sitting out and resting and the back-to-backs and the things like that. 60 wins is impressive, and it is now incumbent upon Milwaukee to take another step here. Wouldn't you say they're the most anonymous top team in any sport going right now? They have the best record in the NBA. And if you stop a man on the street and ask them to name anything about the NBA, they know Giannis. They don't know that he plays for Milwaukee. It's like they know nothing about the team, nothing about the rest of the team or how they play. So they need to make some noise in these playoffs here. And I much as the Celtics and the 76ers have been stories, Toronto continues to keep knocking on doors, and we'll see if a new coach is going to make a difference. Now, that was the knock, of course, against Casey, that, he could get them to the playoffs, but he couldn't get them through. We'll see if the new guy can do that. But I'm curious to see what comes out of the East. And what's your biggest sort of curiosity point about this stuffed West and the matchups we're
going to
see?
To me, the most interesting team in the world is the Houston Rockets right now. Mitch, they started 1-4. They were 11-14, okay? They're 11-14. They have played 42-14 basketball since then, okay? They scored 149 in their last game. They have become a three-point shooting machine, and maybe after we thought last year might be their year, to find a way to beat the Warriors. I keep looking at them, okay? And they'll have a two or three game stretch, but basically for nearly 60 games, the Rockets have been pretty great, and they're sitting there in the three hole right now, okay? And this to me is right now they're the most interesting guys in the world, even more interesting than the Warriors, who have had their own issues this year.
Yeah. Well, because of what I said before, the West being so stuffed, they're going to have an interesting path before they ever see the Warriors. They were most likely going to have to play Oklahoma City, which is always interesting when James Harden and Oklahoma City are on the same court together. Then if they win that, they're probably going to have to play Denver. Assuming, you know, Denver's really
a great
good
mystery guest. Don't you consider
weren't even in the playoffs last year, right?
And they've had the best record pretty much all year until about a week ago.
Yeah, they're just behind Golden State. That's not going to be an easy out. And then we could have what a lot of people probably would feel would be closer to the finals, but it'll be in the semifinals if they do end up playing against Golden State. Again, Mike, we have said this on this podcast all year long. I don't know about James Harden pulling back and throwing up a shot over seven games against the top teams. I don't know if that formula can get you to an NBA title. It can win you a lot of games on any given night, because on any given night in the NBA, when you're traveling and you're coming through or you're on the road or whatever, nobody's prepared for James Harden's excellence. It blows you out of the water. You know, and he throws up 40 and he throws up 48 and he throws up this, and you just, okay, we lose. We couldn't stop him, we lose. But when you're playing seven games and your whole strategy is, how do we stop James Harden? If we keep him, they're not going to beat us with somebody else. I just don't know if they can get past that hump. I look at what Golden State can do with any one of four different guys. And then I look at Houston and saying, well, if he's not scoring, they're not winning. I don't know. I mean, can you see a scenario where they're in the finals and Golden State isn't?
No, listen, you know that you're right. The grind of a seven-game series, okay, often will expose your weaknesses in a way that they just simply don't show up during the regular season. You know, we talk all the time about the coaching adjustments from one game to another, but Mitch, they matter in a seven-game series, okay?
That's right.
That's why you see mood swings and performance swings across that thing. And you're right about Harden, okay? If this is a referendum on him, more than it's not going to be Chris Paul, it's not going to be Mike D'Antoni, this is going to be a referendum on him, because, you know, I don't know how the MVP, you can go broke trying to figure out how the MVP thinks. I think it's going to be him or Giannis, right?
Yeah, I think Giannis is going to win it because of his defense, and you know, but yeah, it's one or the other. It's clearly one or the other.
And so listen, when you asked, my first gut reaction is, who am I looking at? Okay. I'm looking at the Houston Rockets, even though the Warriors, to both of us, continue to be endlessly entertaining, endlessly fascinating. We don't know if this is Kevin Durant's last rodeo with them, or if he's just been bluffing, if he's going to go back. We don't know what they're going to get out of Draymond. We don't know what Boogie Cousins is going to do on far and away the biggest stage of his career, and if he could be the missing piece that they thought they were getting when they got a 7-footer with his skill set.
Well, it's sure going to be different than last year. And, you know, in that old phrase, what a difference a year makes. There is no LeBron James in these playoffs.
Nope.
And this is the first time that we are having this discussion in God knows how long.
Right.
That you say, well, LeBron, never doubt LeBron James in the playoffs, no matter where. There is no LeBron. He's not here. Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning. And if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. Here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers. And you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying hair club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops for a free hair health and scalp analysis and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying hair club service after that initial consultation. Hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club. And I mean, let us remind people that last year's finals were Golden State Cleveland. It was a sweep, but it was Golden State Cleveland. And the semifinals or the conference finals were Cleveland over the Celtics in a great series, 4-3. And Golden State over the Houston Rockets, 4-3. Now, I think we're going to see that one again. But obviously, there's no Cleveland, and I don't know if the Celtics are going to end up being there in the finals. So there's a lot of turnover here, and the absence of LeBron James in the playoffs cannot be understated. I mean, you know, he is still arguably the 1, 2, 3 best player in the league, and he's sitting on a bench, and that doesn't generally happen in the NBA. I mean, if you're that good, maybe you're that good on a on a team that isn't that great, but you make the 7th seed, the 6th seed, or whatever. He's arguably the best player in the league, and he's gone.
Yep.
And it's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He has dominated the conversation for a decade. At this time of year. And now, from the time he took his talents to South Beach, and even before that, when he was a kid and they upset the Pistons, when it looked like the Pistons were going to win again, where he scored had that crazy game where he scored, 28 out of 29 points or something like ridiculous number. Yes, it is. I'll end the NBA discussion this way, Mitch, because you're absolutely right. You know, the elephant in the room this year isn't in the room.
Right. It's the elephant outside the room.
The elephant is the elephant. Anyway, moving on to our party shots. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct. Nobody does. But make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Now, parting shots.
You know why this has been an interesting first week and a half of baseball? As interesting as I can remember over the first week and a half. Because the World Series champs are 3-8, and the Cubs can't win. And the World Series champs are a couple of Mitch Moreland home runs away from being 1-10 to start the season. Here's another reason. The three best records in the American League belong to the Tampa Bay Rays, the Seattle Mariners, who began their own season in Japan and were expected to finish it somewhere in the woods of Oregon. And Mitch, who's got the other best record in the American League? The Detroit Tigers.
Thank you.
This has been a great first week and a half because Mike Trout's come out of the blocks after the biggest contract in history, looking even better than ever, if such a thing is even possible. Cody Bellinger and the Dodgers won't stop hitting home runs. Manny Machado has brought hope to San Diego, and Bryce Harper, the other big free agent of the winter, has brought an amazing amount of excitement to Philadelphia, as he's already begun to justify the Phillies paying him all that money. I know that everybody wants baseball to go faster. Totally on board with that. But man, oh man, the start of the season has reminded everybody who loves baseball why we can't wait sometimes for the season to get started.
Well, this is probably going to fall on deaf ears, but hey, Cassius Winston, how about doing something even more amazing than the year you just had? How about coming back for one more? Oh, I know this might sound like something a fan would want more than you, but consider the data. Despite your excellent stats, the NBA draft projectors have you low on their boards. One major prognosticator doesn't even have you being picked at all. The NBA likes to draft on upside potential, and perhaps as a junior, you're already past that. If so, why not come back and make a run at a title that eluded you and a really good Michigan State team this past weekend? With Winston returning, this team could have 3 significant seniors the bulk of its talent from this year, plus some up-and-coming major talent between Aaron Henry and the new recruits. Wouldn't it also be nice for Cassius Winston to be the one who helps Tom Izzo break the shadow of getting to the big dance but falling short? Winston told me he knew he loved Izzo back when he was a freshman, and one morning Izzo came around 8 o'clock in his car with donuts and juice and drove him to class, him and the other freshmen, just to make sure things were going well. Try finding that in the NBA. So what do you say, Cassius? You missed one chance at making history over the weekend, but you have another. And if the choice is the D-League or the end of some NBA bench, I don't know, another Final Four and donuts with Tom doesn't sound too bad. That's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back again with not only the results of this big little basketball game here, but the Masters is back again. The greatest of them all. And something tells me people will be talking about Tiger Woods. It's just a thought. Tiger has a little work to do. We'll have our work to do then. Thank you for listening to us. You can get this podcast anywhere you get popular podcasts, including the Stitcher platform. So please check it out. Until we see you on Thursday, on behalf of Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great week.